Hey fans, welcome back to the Tight Beam. This is episode number 6. We'll be discussing IFF tonight, the second episode of season 3. We are missing a man. We're playing the missing man formation tonight. We are down Eric. Eric is under the weather, so he will not be with us. Either that or he stroked out during high G maneuver. I'm not sure. But he said it's a sore throat, so I think it may be just a cold. But with us tonight, we do have, well, of course, myself. I'm Lou, and we have Andrew and Shannon. Shannon, how are you tonight?
I am good. Tired, but excited and ready to talk about this episode because it was so good.
Tired from watching the episode over and over again all night? Is that what you... Yeah, so maybe.
You know what? I don't know how much is, like, my body decided to get used to the West Coast time zone a week, you know, a week after I left, or if it's literally just I don't go to bed like a responsible adult. But I will say for last night, yes, that is exactly what it was. I did watch it twice last night, so that's on me.
Oh, nice. And Andrea, how are you tonight?
I'm pretty good. I'm really excited to talk about this episode. It was really, really good.
It was. It was a very good episode. I'm excited as well. Before we get into the episode, though, we do have a little bit of news to cover. Shannon, you put together some of these news items, I guess, right?
Yeah, so, I did.
What is this first you're talking about the must list from
I actually forgot
EW.
To prepare it, so I'll explain it while I prepare it.
Okay, awesome.
So Entertainment Weekly, which, you know, one of their reporter, writer, he does their podcast for sure, is a huge fan of The Expanse. So I have been waiting for The Expanse to show up in Entertainment Weekly in some way, shape, or fashion for a while now. He's moderated a bunch of the panels and what have you. So in this week's issue, the 420 issue, blaze it, The Expanse was finally featured on the Entertainment Weekly must list, which is a list of things that they recommend for the week, things you must enjoy. So The Expanse came in at number 6 out of 10. So, like, you know, there is a limit, but it's number 6. And so they had a quick list of what this show has, because as Stefan on Saturday Night Live says, this show has everything. I'm going to read you the it's a very quick list. I think you guys will appreciate it. Realistic space battles, a super diverse cast, botany with an exclamation point, unexpected cursing, political backstabbing, a 6-foot Martian woman in a mechanized astro suit going beast mode on a spaceship, and Elizabeth Mitchell with a question mark. So, you know, just giving people who read Entertainment Weekly a reason to watch The Expanse, because it also talked about how fans call it Game of Thrones in space as a reference to the scope of the show, not necessarily the content.
Right.
But more reason for non-fans to see what this show is about. Entertainment Weekly is a fun magazine. I enjoy reading
So. And I think it's great that they're putting it out to more mainstream people, too, that may not have even been exposed to The Expanse,
right,
you know, or know how great the books are, or the story is, or how well the production is on the show.
Yeah.
This kind of stuff, I think, goes a long way towards promoting these shows that we all love that may be kind of a little niche show, but getting out for more people to experience.
Right. Especially since, you know, it is now leading into a Superman spinoff, which is stellar. No pun intended.
Exactly, yeah.
I should mention the mini paragraph before the list was filled with space puns, and it was pretty funny.
okay, good.
Her second thing is we got an email from Sarah, who's actually a friend of mine. She's kind of gotten some airtime for a post she made, which is called, like, Best Ways to... support The Expanse under, like, hashtag Renew The Expanse. And this is, we're not coming from a The Expanse is going to get canceled standpoint. Let's just put that down now. We're talking about how can you support the show? And that's what Sarah's post was really about. Ways that you, an Expanse fan, can support the show. So I have a quick, brief rundown of those things. So the most important thing to consider is that you should try and watch the show live if you have sci-fi or space. That is the most important thing to sci-fi, and that is the best way to guarantee that sci-fi keeps helping make it. However, if you can't watch it live, if you have sci-fi or cable, whatever, and you just can't watch it live, DVR numbers and on-demand numbers count the most if you watch within 3 days. So if you just played it in the background on your DVR, just nonstop for 3 days, they don't have to know. They don't have to know you're not watching it. But those views count. And like I said, within like the next day is probably the most important, but within 3 days is important. So that is the most important way to support the show as a US or Canada viewer. Another way you can support the show, but it's a little more indirect, is purchasing the show on Google Play, iTunes, Amazon, buying the DVDs, what have you. It doesn't count for Sci-Fi's viewer count, but what it does is it shows Alcon that there is support and demand for the show so that in the event that something were to happen, Alcon could attempt to shop it around and say, hey, look at all these people who buy our show. So there you go. That's an aspect of that. Excuse me. Another thing you could do, live tweet, tell your friends. If you have friends who have cable, make them watch The Expanse for you. Tell them the same thing I told you. Watch it in the background. Just get your friends to support the show if you can. Tell your sci-fi minded friends to watch the show. The best thing you can do, just like supporting our show, is word of mouth. It's incredibly important that people see how good this show is to you if they respect you. Or, you know, be like James Holden for once in your life, guys. Tell everyone everything about this show. Don't hold anything back. Start some wars over this show. I don't know. And the one thing you should remember is that no matter what, pirating isn't going to stop. I mean, look at Game of Thrones. It's the most successful show, arguably, of all time, at least of recent memory. And it is also the most pirated show because you still have to pay for HBO, whether you pay for HBO Go or the channel, like my dad, because he needs to own 1,000 channels. And that's why I have Sci-Fi, because my dad needs to be able to watch Godfather or John Wayne whenever he wants. That's just the way it is. But no matter what, it's going to get pirated. So using that argument, not going to help. But do what you can to support the show, and that's all that matters. So take this list into advisement. I'll probably retweet it. I can retweet it on the Type Beam if people need it. Think about that information. Keep it in your head. And do your best to support The Expanse, because we all want more. We all want the whole show.
It's all really good advice, because too many times we get complacent. We stop, you know, supporting the shows that we want as much as we should, and then they fall off the radar and they go away. Sometimes way too soon. So
yeah, and as Sarah noted in some of her responses to me and to people on Twitter and Tumblr, sometimes the emotional route, like just pleading with networks on Twitter, Facebook, all that, it doesn't work. It doesn't. Numbers are important to suits. And I'm from a Comcast city, man. I know how hard it is to please Comcast and NBC Universal, but the numbers are what count. So yes, keep your emotional pleas up. Show how much you support the show, because that is important, but it's not what is going to help The Expanse. Like she mentioned, Chuck was only saved because Subway did a thing with them. You know, Chuck only got the 5 seasons. It was on the verge of cancellation too. So remember... Mm-hmm. Emotional is important, but the numbers are what matter to these people. So, and please stop harassing Ty on Twitter about distribution rights. I love getting the explanations because it makes it easier for people, but man, he's getting angry. So, you know, just keep this stuff in mind. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out. I'd be happy to help. Awesome. I have a tiny bit of knowledge and how these things work because I studied film. So,
that's really good advice.
Yeah. Support the show.
So let's dig into the episode now.
Hell yeah.
Episode two. I think we had just a little bit of action and things going on here.
Just a little bit. There wasn't a lot. I was pretty disappointed about that.
Not enough stuff. Sorry, you must've been sleeping during part of the episode because I thought it was just fantastic.
She was too busy tweeting.
I watched it 3 times, so I pretty much got everything.
Yeah, I only watched it once. I normally watch it once, you know, live or shortly after, and then once the next day at lunch, a little bit, you know, before work and so forth. And I never got to it. It was super busy at work, so I never actually had a chance to sit down and watch it again.
There is no excuse.
I know.
Everybody,
I know.
Start tweeting Lou. He needs to watch it twice.
So what are your impressions of the episode overall? As the, you know, how you thought this one stacked up against the first one, Andrea? Let's start with you.
A lot of things happened. My emotions were going all over the place. I did find that there are a lot of times where the action, it's kind of like a roller coaster ride where I was like a really high, and then all of a sudden it cuts to something else that just makes me go really down low, and then it goes up again. So I don't know how I felt about all those cuts and transitions, because every single time I was like at the edge of my seat and I was like, no, I don't care what's happening on Earth. I want to know if somebody's going to get their hose plugged in again. So that was something. But overall, the visuals and just the action that was happening was amazing. I think that we're going to go into a little bit more detail when we talk about the specific scenes.
Sure.
But it was a thriller. And if I were to compare it to one of my favorite episodes of season one, CQB or CBQ, one of those.
It's CQB. You were good. You were right.
Yeah. Okay. Those are my two favorite episodes right now. So I'm really excited to go deeper into it.
You know, the one thing I'll say...
And we got an introduction of a new character, so I'm excited.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I'll admit to you here, and this makes me really happy, is the visuals are amazing. And every time I watch this and I see how good they're doing with this, and I keep asking myself, and why is it Star Wars can't produce a TV show because it's too expensive? I don't get it. This is phenomenal stuff they do for visual effects. So... anyway, this is not our Star Wars podcast. So we'll get back to the expanse. Shannon, where were you in this episode? How high or how low did this episode bring you?
Well, I was about 20 minutes late for the episode because we took my grandmother out for a nice dinner.
Tell Graham you got me back on time.
Well, so I started watching literally as Holden was yelling at everyone, so on point. But, you know... I'll start by saying this. The second 20 minutes that I watched were really good. I really enjoyed it. I was like sitting here at my computer watching it, just screeching like, oh, this is so cool. Not even necessarily just the visuals, which, yes, were stunning. But some of the things that we, you know, saw, like the ships chasing, you know, the UN escort chasing the Razorback, and the Rossi decelerating so that they can catch.
So
that
good.
Was so cool. That was so
my
cool.
favorite moment. It was just
amazing.
I mean, honestly,
and it happened so fast, but it happened perfectly. You know, right. It's like it gave you this sense of how precise they had to be and how fast that all happened.
Yeah.
But it worked out really well. Yeah, it was nicely done.
I had to watch that scene about four times just to enjoy how amazing everything transitioned.
I also, going into that, I really love that banter between Alex and Holden, because they emphasize so hard that Alex was in the Navy and they don't really talk about Holden. And, you know, he went to Officer Academy. So, like, now I'm listening to him talk about this maneuver and how worried Alex is and when it actually works. And I'm just like, he's like, it reminded me of almost, it just vaguely, because it's not the same thing. The scene from the Star Trek movie when Kirk is like trying to beat the Kobayashi Maru. And I'm just sitting here like, Holden is that guy. Holden is that, like, everyone must have hated him. So, like, wow, that's really smart. But he doesn't. Put it like he puts it out like it's no big deal. Like, it was really cool to have like that military interaction.
And it was nice to see it acknowledged in the show too. I can't remember if it was Alex or if it was Amos who mentioned how, you know, his tactics were and how great he was doing.
Yeah, it was Amos or not Amos?
Yeah,
Alex.
I thought it was
Alex.
I wasn't sure.
It was when he was coming up the stairs and Alex was commenting on how crazy. His idea was
that's awesome to acknowledge that kind of thing and how good the tactics were. So that was nice to see.
I love Book Holden, but he seemed to be very lucky. Like he you know, I always got the impression he understood tactics and he talked about it a lot, but there was never an emphasis on the tactics when he had these fights. Right.
In the books, it felt like he was being lucky at what he was doing. It's like he was in the right place at the right time and everything fell into place.
Flip of a coin. Right. Let's see what's going to happen.
Like, let's try this because I think it'll work. And then Holden seemed more sure that it would work than he did in the books.
Mm-hmm. And so he seemed very confident about what he was going to do and how it was going to react. And even at the end when he mentioned, okay, you know, now we're in a shooting war. Now we just declared war on Earth.
Yeah.
And he knows the ramifications of what's happened now, which is awesome. Before we get into the specifics of the three or four storylines in this episode, I'd like to acknowledge kind of what we're just talking about the book versus the TV show. And we mentioned a little bit last week, and we're every episode now we're getting further and further away from what the books were. And it feels really right to me that we're getting this. And I feel better about that, and I feel less worried about spoiling something from the books because we're not talking about that kind of thing anymore. We don't know what's going to be the next topic or how this is going to, you know, play out. And even with this episode, we get to the end, and that was not the same way we had people getting together we did in the books. It was like, okay,
and that's one of the best, like, visuals I've not, like, I mean, obviously we talked about how amazing the ships fighting were. But in terms of like something small scale, this was the most stunning thing we've seen since the blood snowflakes in season two. It's just, that was a gorgeous shot from beginning to end of that whole sequence, from Bobby coming down to the doors opening. And first of all, Null G is just buck wild. I forgot that they were in Null G, so I was like, why is she doing that? I was like, oh wait, duh. But you know, that whole sequence is just stunning, and the fact that I get to enjoy that with people because it's new for me too is awesome. It's awesome getting to experience something for the first time with other people. So I, you know, I don't like to brag about book knowledge because I have plenty of people who would prefer to watch the show first, which is absolutely fine. Totally fine, because you don't know how long the show will last. So if it's easier for you to pick up the books after, that's totally fine. No judgment from me. But I find so much joy in experiencing things with people that I haven't experienced. So this whole episode overall is technically from the books, but almost every individual scene is new. So the whole episode was new. The plot, maybe not, but, you know, the only thing that was completely new was, you know, Anna being brought forward. But honestly, the whole episode felt new because everything, all those details weren't there.
Yeah. Okay, so we have those four storylines really in the episode. We have, you know, Bobby and Abisarl on the Razorback. We have the stuff going on Earth, which I didn't think was as interesting as some other stuff. But and then we have the stuff with Mao on Io, and the whole thing of what's going on with May and stuff. I thought that was very intriguing. And then we have stuff on the ship, which I'm still going to call the Rosie. So. Where do you guys want to start?
No, Lou, say its new name.
No.
You know Avasarala is going to make a joke about it.
Yeah, hopefully.
I'm trying to pronounce her name the way I'm supposed to. I keep thinking
of the Nina the Pinton in Santa Maria, and I'm like, no, it's not right. Okay, so where are we going to start? Are we going to talk about Bobby and Avasarala first?
Avasarala? Sure, let's go for it.
Okay. So, I thought the visuals in this scene exactly were the best of the whole episode. I mean, we had the tension of them getting away from the UNN ship. There was one thing I didn't quite like in the very beginning of the sequence when they're first talking about they showed the overlays of where weapons ranges were and how they could dodge out of a missile here and there. And she's like, well, we just got to sit tight and wait. And they waited about 4 seconds and they were out of danger. And I'm like, well, that was anticlimactic. I'm like, you could have made it last a little bit longer.
Did you want it to last the whole entire episode, like Star Wars?
No, but I mean, it came back into it.
Well,
like,
I mean, if you kept watching, Lou,
like,
you turned off the episode. Like, if you kept watching,
right then. I just didn't watch anymore. No, I didn't.
You
would have
seen that it didn't work.
No, I know that, but I mean, it's just like it was like all of a sudden. Oh, we gotta just be patient. Okay, let's go. I'm like, come on. So, but I thought that was pretty interesting. I love the fact that they were playing up the physicality of how Bobby can withstand the G's, and she's like, I can do four more G's standing in my head, and they're waiting for Avicerella to stroke out because she's really pushing the limits of what she can do. And she's asking her questions like, what are you doing? She, I'm just trying to figure out if you're gonna stroke out or not. I'm like, oh God, this is really
their banter
really
was very good.
It was a very well done scene, probably in a difficult way because they can't look at each other. They're not doing that scene face to face.
It's very hard to talk to the person behind you.
Right.
I know from experience.
So that whole thing I thought was beautiful, and it led right up to that awesome scene we talked about before, where they took out the UNN ship, or just disabled it.
Mm-hmm.
So beautiful.
That's an important distinction. That was the whole point of Holden's plan, was to take out the engines.
Right. But he does bring up the point, though, that, we can't, they're not just going to give us a pass because we just disabled them instead of destroying them. So, yeah, they are now in it. And this whole thing is, again, the difference between the book and the show. They don't have the protections they had in the book that were at this point.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to say what they were because I thought it was a very, very well done part of the book. I can't wait for people to read that and get to that part. But yeah, this was the most, anticipated, I guess, part of the show I'm watching. Just the you didn't know how it was going to play out. And because I'm now comfortable with the fact that we're getting different stuff than the books gave us, I really don't know where we're at. So. Mm. That was awesome.
I think that the most interesting part of it is that in different shows and all that stuff, they were like, oh, okay, hot pursuit, like we need to go really fast. But at the same time, you're like, I want them to speed up. But at the same time, somebody's in pain because they're not used to what is happening. And it was pretty interesting because I was reading some reviews and stuff like that. And one of the interesting perspectives was that the star of the episode was gravity itself. Mm-hmm. Because it did so much in this episode. Right. It wasn't just destroying Avicerella during this episode with the amount of pain that she was undergoing. It was also the things that happened in the Contorta, I'm going to say it. Sorry, Lou. With Prax and Amos. Like, those things were
gravity
really
was a bad
intense.
Guy.
Yeah.
Yep. It was just going against the characters that we love and
the plants.
It was just very
that we
interesting.
Love.
And the plants. I was so upset.
That was awful.
We'll get into that.
I was going to say, we talked briefly, I think it was on the one we did without Shannon, where we're talking about the way they show under G-load on a chair, and it doesn't really feel right. This one looked a lot better to me than they did in the other episodes. It felt, you could see the stuff on Avicerella's neck where she was laying there, in the chair, and it really felt like she was really under pressure.
Yeah.
And I thought they did a great job with that. Mm-hmm. They really, really did.
It made me feel so bad for her. I was just and it's nice to see that relationship between Bobby and Avicerella grow because one of the things that I noted is when Bobby says that we're in this together. Yes. And then she says that we're on the same side. And Avicerella asks what side. And she's like, the right side. And it was such a nice moment because there's this Marine that does not trust Earth and she's almost like bonded to this other strong character. And I really enjoy their interactions. There was a lot of love or care to make sure that she was okay. Yeah. And I really enjoyed that.
Well, she says, I'm not going to let you die. Right. And that was good. And then you had Avicerella kind of laughing and chuckling and explaining that, look, here's a Martian Marine who is risking her life to save me. You know, who would have thought that would happen type thing. And that was, it was powerful stuff going on there and really showing that these, the characters are developing in a different way than we're used to seeing them in the book. And you know, Shannon mentioned this last week that, you know, it's what you think of Holden from the book versus the show. And it's different. Not that it's wrong or better or worse. It's just different. You know, I'm coming to terms now with how Bobby's and Avicerella's relationship has started and where it's going and how it's developing, which is, you know, you couldn't make it any more different than it was in the book for those two characters. And this is really satisfying.
It's really funny because I'm actually doing another reread of Caliban's War, and I had to like stop myself and be like, wait a second, this does not match what I've been seeing all along. And it was really funny because, again, yes, you're getting such a fresh feeling of the development of the relationships between these characters, and it's very nice to see.
Well, since we're talking about gravity, let's go right into the stuff that happened on the Pinus Contorta.
Alex called it the Rossi, so you can too. Also, they're
I missed that.
They're also no longer very anonymous. Good job, Holden. I tweeted that too. So much for an anonymity. Like, now you've just attacked a UN ship. You might as well just change back to Rocinante at that point.
Right, right. You can't pass as a rock hopper anymore.
No.
So. They have missiles? Yeah. So speaking of the gravity, though, you guys mentioned that scene on the ship, and it was, again, we get so much detail in the books of explaining stuff and detailing the effects of gravity, the effects of a high G load in the body. And we don't get that in the TV show. You can't. There's no way to show that. But to have this thing, and they might have spent a second more on the whole thing of why it was important to stow stuff. You know, it happened. It showed it, but
they mentioned it before, but now we've seen it. Holden's coffee cup.
Because of the book, I had more information about it, and I know that's why it's dangerous now. Versus somebody who hasn't read the books, maybe that wouldn't be as evident. But
they
did a good job showing now why it is so important.
Yeah, we hinted at it before. Now you get to see it with blades.
It was so funny because I'm watching. On Wednesdays, I watch them with my friends, and they haven't read the books, and they don't really understand the implications of a lot of things that were seen. And the whole entire time that this scene was going, they were like, oh, beep, oh, beep, oh, somebody's going to die. So they were freaking out, and it was so much fun. And although it was scary, it was so intense, and I really enjoyed it. I was very worried about where everything was going to go and land.
What if Max dies here?
Exactly.
I know, right?
Anything can happen now because we're so far off reservation. Right. But, you know, it's that kind of thing where it's not just a people, it's anything. It's damaging equipment. It's damaging the tools that you would have stored. You know, it kind of comes back to real world stuff, too. And so this stuff is so really set in the real world. It makes me so happy when I read this and kind of relate it to things that I know have happened. Went to school in Florida. My roommate was an aerospace engineer. We were, you know, right near Cape Canaveral. And he worked summers up at the Cape doing, you know, refit stuff for the shuttles. And they were telling a story to us one time that when the first shuttle was stood up on its tail to be mounted to the tanks and get rid of the go, they said it sounded like a pinball machine because people had shoved nooks and crannies, anything they could, you know, a pair of dice here or this, you know, whatever they changed there. So they get it back later and say, this was in space. I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, you know, you know, nothing experiencing these kind of G loads, but you know, it's the same kind of thing in a spaceship. You do 3 or 4 G's on launch and that stuff's falling to the bottom of the shuttle and it's like, wow, it could be a little dangerous. Not as dangerous as a drill to the face, but you know.
Some good reflexes there.
Oh boy.
After what he had to go through to get to Pratt, I was like, I don't even know how he did
that
it.
Was solid.
I'm not sure how he got back to his seat though. I don't know. So what else happened on the ship that was important to us in this episode?
The plants. Well, first of all,
I left.
So like I said, I missed the first 20 minutes. So I turn it on. I'm watching the first half. I gotta say, that scene with Holden was hilarious. When he's so busy dying for coffee and also in pain that he just walks right by it, reaches for a mug, and is like, wait a second. And that like turn and he sees the table was so good. I had to pause it because I was laughing. Because I was like, yeah, big mood. I feel that. See,
and,
I'd do
and,
that.
And I saw that scene. I'm thinking to myself, he's going to grab the coffee cup, turn around and go, oh yeah, I wrote the coffee maker. But that wasn't even the scene.
No, like, oh, plants, like, which is somewhat more startling than not having a coffee machine. But I really like that because I missed the line explaining why they had the plants. I just got it when I was rewatching just now.
Okay.
So for anyone who also didn't pick up on it, Prax and Amos explain to Holden that they're almost out of air filters. So by putting in plants that purify air on the ship, it will make up the difference and at least stretch out their air filters till they can get new ones after Io. So
I wonder where they got the plants though.
They I mean, the Rossi had plants in the walls. There could be seeds somewhere. We don't know. Prax could have found more seeds. We don't know.
That was a good question, Lou.
Why are we asking questions?
Very well established, very well
I
rooted,
thought the whole whole arc was very cute. These three boys gardening together.
It was.
I also loved that line from Holden because I forgot he's from Earth for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
He's like, oh yeah, I used to love gardening. Like, oh, it's been a while since I gardened. I was like, oh right, he was a farm boy. But that them work together with all the conflicts and everything between them, because Holden's like trying to be more open to Prax. I mean, God, I wrote down that line when he says to Alex, "We promised you we'd help. We promised you we'd help you find your daughter." And Prax says, "I don't have a say in this." "Yes, you do. You're part of our crew." And he said, he turns to Alex, he goes, "Can you look him in the eye and tell him that whatever this might be is more important than finding his kid? I did that once and I'm not doing it again." So having...
I actually wanted to talk about it. I love that moment. Yeah. It was so
good.
That was
so passionate.
It makes you think, and it's like, you know, you're right. It's true. And it was such a nice moment because it establishes a little space for Prax to be there. Right. And it was very nice for although everybody's broken, he's still part of the crew. And it was a very nice touching moment.
And even
he is actually doing a good job of integrating himself into the crew and being a regular person, not just a passenger.
They were gardening together. Loved that. It was so mundane.
Nothing brings together people like gardening.
It was so mundane. And just seeing these three guys garden together. But especially because Amos is very clearly aligning with Holden now. He consistently backed Holden up the whole episode. And even when Prax disagreed with Holden and voted to go, you know, save the Razorback, Holden still... I don't know. I feel like I saw somebody say this and I agree. I feel like Holden's putting this new mission, using it to wall himself away from everything that's upsetting him. Like, you know, this is his new obsession, but it's actually to help someone. And he's like, I'm helping someone. I don't care if I'm heartbroken. I don't care if my leg's broken. I don't care if there's a war going on. I'm going to help this person.
It gives him something to do and focus on.
It gives him control over the things
control.
That he has no control over it. And that's a very important thing because everything was happening to him and he had no control about where things were going.
Right.
But he has the moment to choose that direction that he wants to take. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's why he's so aggressive in his decisions right now, because he has a moment to choose what he wants to do, not letting fate decide what's going to happen to him.
And yet when Prax does break the tie, he still goes with what Prax says. Mm-hmm. He's really putting Prax ahead of what he wants.
Mm-hmm. And I think from a show standpoint, it's helping us get the crew back to a more cohesive unit again. You know, I was really worried about how we're going to do that, because it was like, wow, this is going really far off what I'm used to seeing, and I want these people to be a team. You know, I really need that for me to be a happy viewer again, is to see a team playing out for this whole thing. And they're going to need it, because there's going to be some pretty bad stuff coming up. I mean, I'm assuming.
So you must have enjoyed then Alex and Naomi's scene, which I really loved.
How so?
When she came in and talked to him, and he was like totally chill about it. And he actually was friendly and thanked her after all of his hostility in the last episode, because like I talked about on Sunday, I think he's going to be the first one to come around because he wants his family back. They're his family now.
Yep.
And,
you
know, sticking on Alex, I also really loved him telling Holden, "I'm a Martian. Even if I don't have the uniform, I'm going to help another Martian." Like, I see, like him yeah, sticking by his guns.
But that part seemed a little bit weird to me because, I mean, he's not part of the MMC anymore. He's not part of the military.
But he's Martian. And Martians yeah, stick together. Yeah. That's okay. Always been his thing. He always yep, thinks about Mars. That's why he got upset with Naomi. I could have given it to Mars, but I didn't do it because we didn't vote to. He's,
right.
And when Alex was, or when Amos was defacing the Martian flag, he's still very Martian. Like, yeah, he can put it aside because he loves flying, but unlike Holden, who gave up his allegiance to Earth, unlike Amos, who doesn't give a crap about Earth.
Right.
He's very Martian. He was in the Navy, which means he's not a true believer like other characters are, like Bobby, but he's still very Martian. And so the fact that he was giving in to his tribal urges, like, I want to help one of my own, that for me was just like, yes, Alex, I am mm-hmm, so glad you're okay, more than comic relief now.
Yeah. Okay. I can kind of see that.
Yeah. But I can that see where you're coming me, from, too, though. You're not wrong.
Yeah, it just, to me, in the moment, it just seemed like it was out of left field because he really didn't seem that passionate about helping Martians before. I mean, he does, but not to that extent. It just seemed a bit like, wow, all of a sudden, okay. But
I think it's the
especially,
war.
Especially with as many things going on.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I think it's the
as
war.
As it was.
Because, yeah. I mean, he was looking yeah, at the feeds before, and he didn't look too happy
and
with
when
it.
When he called his son, do what your yeah, mama right, and the government tells you to do.
Right, right.
Like, he's, well, I think he's realigning.
Yeah.
That could be, yeah, yeah.
Well, one of the last things before we move to another one, I don't know if you had anything to say about. One of the lines that I really enjoyed listening to, and that was by Amos, is when he says, everybody needs that one person who never gives up on you. I was like, that was yeah, a pretty interesting
a
one.
I have a quick Amos one I'm going to throw at you, too. When Alex comes down, it's like, we got a situation. And Amos goes, story of our lives.
Yeah, yeah.
From the
such
background,
a relatable
too,
moment.
He's not even in like fully in the shot. He still says it. I thought that was very funny. Anyway.
Yeah. One thing before we move on to the next story element from this episode, one thing I kind of wanted to touch on that's kind of striking a chord with me against how the realism really works for the show, because they do a great job making sure that everything feels as real as it possibly could. When we went back to doing the very beginning of the show and they showed, you know, previously on The Expanse, they showed the war going on in space. I'm like, okay, impressive shot again. But I'm like, and then I started thinking to myself, like, okay, if we're really doing this realistically, and we had, you know, a firefight in orbit and ships are being destroyed, there's a lot of debris going to be floating around as a cloud around this planet, and you're not going to be able to get away from this planet anymore. I mean, that's one thing that just strikes me as being very bizarre, because we can't clean that up. At some point, there'll be so much debris in orbit, you're not going to be able to launch and get back into space again from those planets. And it's one thing they've never touched on, and I never thought about until I actually saw the battle again in my mind. I'm like, oh, yeah. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, NASA and everybody who launches from
space
Earth now
junk,
play, you know, well they plan yeah, to blow explosive bolts and change, you know, stages of a rocket at a certain altitude where things will burn up on the way back into the atmosphere, not just, you know, too high where, oh, it's, you know, it's going to be part of the
float
the
there
orbit.
Forever.
I mean, NASA tracks everything is largely Gulf or larger in orbit,
there
so
goes,
they wouldn't know where those are. And when you say
the
a window
first
for
thing
launch,
that came...
yeah.
The first thing that came to mind was that net that grabs the rockets. I can see like a ship like coming around and just like grabbing Skyler, everything.
That's all I'm gonna think about now.
What's your job?
Wrapping everything so nicely.
They could have hired Uncle Mateo
up,
to do that.
They could have.
Oh, rest
yeah,
in peace.
Yeah, rest in peace. Okay, so from here, I guess we should probably. I mean, let's talk about the boring one next. Let's talk about Earth.
Don't talk about my girl like that, okay? She was awesome.
She was. I enjoy her as an actress, and she did a great job in this episode.
I wish they would have not done that in this episode. I'm going to say that. I'm going to probably okay, get a lot of people coming at me.
Why do you not want that here?
I felt like there was just so much to focus on, and I felt like I wanted to see a lot more of her, and I am still so curious about her. mm-hmm. And her as an Anna, that.
Well, they have to keep this relevant to tie in, you know, Aaron Wright and what's going on with Mao.
Yeah, we'd just be getting 2 second clips of Aaron Wright staring at his phone otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't do a ton with it. And the whole Anna thing was a bit of a distraction, I think, from the overall picture of the war and where Aaron Wright really stands and whose side who's on. But it was nice to bring her into this episode.
Oh, yeah. Like, don't get me wrong. I enjoyed her introduction.
She did an amazing job.
Yes. She is very, like, her expressions and the way that she carried out a lot of those emotions, whether they were displeasure or actual love, were really good. And it doesn't take away from it. I just wish that I would have gotten a little bit more because I'm curious about how they're going to treat her character.
Yeah. I mean, that protest scene was really good. And I got to say, one of the best parts of it was the Eros was an inside job sign. There's a sign that says Eros was an inside job. I have a cap I can show you guys later, but my goodness, that was funny. But I thought it was a good intro for her. Mm-hmm. You know, seeing, I mean, we didn't know the changes they were going to make to her background, but, you know, that was very good. Her and the protester and her yelling at the guy and how she won't take no for an answer.
Yeah. What's your name? We're not supposed to give our names. You know?
And she's like, you're going to take him or I will get you fired. Like, oh my God, suburban mom. But I thought her intro was very solid. I thought it was like a good way to show her compassion, but also her like...
her strength.
She's firm. Yeah. She's compassionate, but she is firm as hell.
Right. And I mean, you know, Elizabeth Mitchell usually plays pretty strong characters and she does a great job with them. So I was happy to hear her get cast this a while ago and even happier now seeing her on screen. I mean, I just love her as an actress. So now we did have some feedback from somebody who was asking about the changes to her backstory and how important that is here. I mean, something we got to talk about, I think, but it kind of goes into the same category of a lot of things we've been discussing, especially this episode, just, you know, the differences between the book and the show. And I think I was probably more critical of this stuff early on than I am now. I'm getting more and more comfortable with it. I don't know if you guys are, but I'm getting more and more relaxed about the differences, maybe because there's so many differences now that it's okay. It's a different story. To me, really.
Yeah, I mean...
But what do you guys feel about the way her backstory has been talked about so far?
So our submitter, Rhea Hotaru, by the way, I don't know if I'm saying that right, but I'm used to it the other way because that's how she is on Tumblr. But, you know, they said that the biggest thing for them was that, you know, Anna was always hopeful. And she had faith in humanity and the universe and faith in her faith in God. Like, she was a hopeful character. And so it was hard hard for them to see her now be a disillusioned ex-political speechwriter who left because of dirty politics and less about religion. And I can see why that's hard. I don't want to talk on differences, though. I want to talk on that specifically, why that's hard. Okay. Because... that's why I loved Holden the books, and that's why I was upset with some of Holden's changes, because I am a person who believes that humanity is good. I look for the best in people all the time. So having a character that didn't do that anymore was hard. Mm-hmm. And so I can understand why.
But she still has that belief in God, though. She still feels like she's there.
But the issue is that it sounds like it wasn't there before she left. That's what this person's upset about. You know what I mean? It's she's not faithful now, but to them, it feels like because we are not getting an indication that it was there from the beginning, like it was for book Anna, that it's not that it's not as strong, but it doesn't feel like it feels like the faith came from her disillusionment rather than her. And it was her introduction. We could be proven wrong. But
well, let me ask you this, though. Did we get anything in the episode that makes you feel like she didn't have this faith before?
There was a conversation with Sorrento Gillis where he said to her, like, I don't remember you being this religious or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't take that kind as of being indicated, that she wasn't religious at all.
Well, no, yeah, know? But the thing is that Anna was always a pastor. Like, in the books.
I think one of the reasons why I felt like I wish I could have gotten more of Anna is because of these things that I'm still trying to figure her out. There, we didn't get enough of her to completely give her a backstory in the show.
Right.
And that's something that I'm looking forward to see a little bit more of her background to learn what are more of those similarities that we do see in the book.
Yeah.
Or if they're really going to go full turn on her.
I just don't want to tell people to get over it because it's not the
books. No.
Not at all. And I think
it's a very valid concern because the type of character Anna was and the way that certain people who read the books reacted to her, like very negatively, having her now become someone who's like world weary, it feels like it's leaning more towards them than it was the people who loved her because of her faith. So I'm personally thinking we might be proven wrong, but having her introduction be so world weary, of course, is going to concern somebody who loved that about her.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I experienced that myself.
Yeah.
And so
I think there's been stuff that we've all been kind of stuck on that are things like, that's not the way it was in the book. And we're all going to have those moments where you're going to get to that one part, you're going to go, no, that doesn't feel right. And it's very valid to feel that way. And I'm not trying to put, this person down for saying their thoughts about Anna or Shannon, your thoughts on Holden. Mm. We all have those and they're all very personal to us and we need to keep them inside of ourselves. But at the same time, I think we all need to be open to what they're showing us in the story going forward, especially because, the creators of the books are working on this series as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is we need to remember that we have to give everybody that's working on the show and writing the show faith. They know what they're doing. And if we're not enjoying it right now, there might be a reason why they're doing things differently. Yeah. So, yes, it's not going to be the way that is in the books. Yes, it's not going to be the way that you wanted things to go. But having faith in the people that are actually writing something that we actually love and we actually care about is very important.
Yeah,
And some of the changes they make are for a different form of telling the story, too. Yeah. It's a visual medium versus a book.
It's totally okay to be disheartened, though. It is.
Oh, yeah.
Don't dwell on it.
But I was certainly super disheartened
with everything I've seen, both said about and from Holden over the first two seasons. But I was able to get over it, and I heard that things were going to be good in season three, and they have been.
Maybe it's not so much getting over it as accepting it, maybe
looking past
and also I think you're more comfortable with the changes they've made now that we're seeing a different part of Holden.
That's what I said,
because things kind of come around and things are going to move and shape into what we think or what they think they need to be, which I think works out really well in most cases. I mean, as opposed to, take it out of this world for a second and go into, I don't know if anybody is listening to the show has watched the show Under the Dome, based on the Under the Dome book from Stephen King.
I watched one episode.
Yes.
Completely different story.
That's what I've heard.
The book versus the show. And to the point where we have characters that are the same name, but it's a different character. It's like, I don't remember the names, but Bob was this character and Jim was this character. And now Jim is Bob's character. I'm like, what? I stopped watching it. But, this is a much better version of doing this.
Yeah.
And I think because the creators are involved in the writing of the show or the production of the show, and the writers seem to be doing a very good job this season. And I've said this before on other shows I've been on that, the actors, the writers, the producers all need to find their footing and find the characters in themselves, and they will grow into that as we move along.
The
first season of most shows is pretty bad sometimes as far as character development.
I mean, I'm just sensitive to this topic, and I feel for this person because I've been there.
And right. Again, her thoughts are welcomed, and we want to hear them because we want the perspective.
We want to discuss this.
Exactly. We welcome anybody. Yes, we welcome people giving us their perspective because when we get different perspectives, and this is why it's nice to have all four of us doing the show, when we get different perspectives, we learn something different, and that's very important.
And if three or four of us here or somebody writes into us and gives us a thing to talk about and we all don't agree, that makes for better discussions.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, most of the time, if you had three of us here that are just saying, oh my God, that was awesome. And the next thing, oh my God, that was awesome too. It's very boring.
Yeah, like that time when we could all tell that Lou was displeased and we're all like, all right, Lou, tell us what you hated. Like, we like discussing. I know I sound aggressive sometimes, but I like being able to discuss things. I've just been.
Well, let's move on to the last topic for tonight, or the last element of the story.
Do it.
The whole, you know, May and Strickland and Mao.
You mean Prickland? That's his name.
You know, he had that creepy look in his face when he was passing May off to the nurse or the other researcher, whoever it was, and he was smiling, and then immediately he like changed his face to like.
I was cold as ice.
I was like, whoa, what happened there? His face just like changed to like, okay, I'm back in business mode. We're going to find out what he's doing.
That was awful.
He'll kill people.
The whole entire time that we were seeing those scenes, it pissed me off. Every single time that May was like, where's my daddy? I was just like, girl, you're going to find him soon. Don't you worry.
I just wanted to like jump in and like do a huge swing punch that would hit both Prickland and Mao. I want to get them both at the same time. I'm
like
a black
the three
belt.
Stooges
I
or something.
I want to get them both at the same time. Yeah, just knock them out.
Okay, so basically where we're at, we had May on the research station.
Yes.
And we're learning more about what they're doing with the kids and how they're using the kids. You know, it does give you a part of the story of what's going on with the protomolecule and the hybrids they're building and, you know, the weapons that Mao had promised Aaron Reich. I mean, I'm still unclear as to where we're going with this because I don't know. There's so many things in motion here. And you got Aaron Reich playing, you know, both sides of the fence here. He's... You know, in one term, he's trying to get what he wants out of Mao, and the other time, he's let's just, you know, kill Mao and get rid of this whole part of the equation, which I'm like, oh, okay.
You know,
I'm not sure where he really lives now.
There was some interesting moments here, and it's really funny because I even wrote it down. Just the viewer discretion is advised in the Space Channel is really funny.
We don't get that here.
Exactly.
But they don't care about viewers in the U.S.
Dub over it.
There's one moment where Mao says, mother effer, and it was just so good, and I wish everybody could have listened to it because I find myself hearing all these
buy
bad
the show
words.
On iTunes. Just kidding.
So
exactly.
Good.
That's where you're gonna get that.
But aside from that, one of the things that I was very excited and very curious about was the introduction of Katoa. I was like, what is going on here? Because it is very different in the books. I am excited to see how things are going to shape up when and if Prax goes and saves May, because I think that he's going to play a huge part in them seeing the monstrosities of what's going on in terms of the testing and the children. Yeah. So I'm really excited to see how that's going to shape up.
I mean, we now know that Holden's suspicions are confirmed because it straight up was just like decommissioned mine on Io. It's just like, oh my God, he was right. But yeah. Oh man. I have so much anxiety about this storyline in particular.
And yet we don't have the details yet to really be,
no.
I mean, I feel like I could be anxious about it too, but I'm not as much as I think I should be because I don't know where they're going with it.
And,
and
they're
going to
use
bad.
Them as what? They're putting them in pods.
They're using
what are they
going
to do with them?
Well, they're putting them in those car carrier things you'd have on the top of your car
stop,
rack. Because that's
stop.
What that was.
I can't
like,
unsee
they
that
could
now.
Disguise that a little bit more.
Stop.
But anyway, the thing that bugs me the most about this whole part of the storyline is I wonder what's going on in Venus.
Yeah.
It's all tied into this, but we're not getting that. I'm like, come on. I really want that part of the story.
There has to be some boogeyman where you don't get part of the story. It's menacing and it's there.
One step at a time, Lou. We cannot go through everything in one episode.
I know.
We were too busy making sure Bobby and Avasarala didn't die.
We got subtle hints
and
of
the
Venus.
Plants. We had gardening to do, okay?
Oh, boy. Okay.
Gardening.
Oh, is there anything else we need to discuss about the episode itself? Do we leave anything out?
I liked that Ty was tweeting about it. The scene when Alex says IFF and Naomi asks him what that means. Mm-hmm. A lot of people buy into the trope that, like, the smartest person there has to know everything. Naomi wasn't in the military. She wanted nothing to do with the military. She said to Holden while drunk that uniforms are not her thing. So, of course, she might not know what IFF is. I only know what it is because I watch a lot of TV shows and play a lot of video games. So I thought it was good to show that while, yes, she is the smartest person on the ship, that doesn't mean she knows everything. Mm-hmm. And that goes for everybody. Everybody's going to know what their specialty is. Again, like Lou and I talked about, they finally brought in Holden's military knowledge. Like, Holden knows about that. Alex knows about that. Amos doesn't. Naomi's not going to, and Prax certainly isn't going to. You do have to show that the characters are going to have not just perspective differences, but knowledge differences.
Because right. Experience.
Everyone does. So I thought that distinction was very important. I know a lot of people were upset about it, and I get it, but unfortunately, it's not how it is in the real world. Sometimes the smartest person you know has no common sense and doesn't know what the most common sayings mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is. So I really liked that. And I just was really glad Naomi and Alex are talking again.
Yeah, definitely.
One stepstone at a time.
Baby steps.
Well, we're about an hour into the show. We're trying to keep them to about an hour. So why don't we kind of run through the feedback that we got this week pretty quickly. I know we got a lot of it, but there's some good stuff. So I will let you guys cover that if you don't mind.
All right. So I'll start. What we were just asking was similar to every single other episode. What was your favorite line? What was your favorite moment? So here are some of the responses. So from Ben, he said, Anna, definitely Anna. Craig, he said, Holden's maneuvers under pressure to disable and destroy a bigger and badder ship while saving the Razorback, his crew, and the crew of the escort ship, and knowing Alex and Naomi could do it. So even though that there's that distrust, he still trusts, which is interesting. Alex said, Amos catching that drill roughly 0.0072 nanometers away from Prax's head. I hope you did not measure that. Robert, he said, Prax being the tiebreaker. And Shannon, go along.
Sure. Veowega said, Holden's tactics and use of nukes in a non-lethal way, which that was cool. Aaron Wright being put in his place a couple times by Anna, also cool. And Prax on the rotor Tachi? Not sure if that was supposed to be. I don't know. Anyway, Rhea Hotaru said the shot of Bobby carrying Avasarala through the transport tunnel and Holden having a brilliant tactician moment. Also, Prax deciding to go save the Razorback with the fake out and the explanation later. Bianca said Anna and her family and the Rocinante crew cooperating with each other. MJ loved the part where Anna hugged the pillow because that is from the books and I cried. And of course, the scenes on the Razorback, the space battle, and choosing to save lives on the UN ship. And she loves Anna because of her resolve and no BS attitude. Amanda said Anna's burn on Aaron Wright and when the Rossi crew mentioned that Prax is one of the team. And it's always going to be the Rossi to her too, Lou.
Good. Good. It should be. Okay, so we thank everybody for their feedback. What was your guys' favorite moment? I mean, we should at least give ours, too, since
That's true.
Asked people what theirs were. Shannon, what was your favorite moment or line from this episode?
Well, my favorite line was Holden's passioned speech about wanting to save May after not wanting to save May before. That was very good and very well delivered. Favorite scene? Space battle. Space battle always wins. Even though Eros was an inside job, space battles always win.
Andrea, what about yours?
Favorite scene, space battle. I can take a look at that scene a million times and never get tired of it. I'm always going to be blown away by it. And then one of my favorite moments is actually between Bobby and Avasarala, when Avasarala asks her if she's a good pilot, and she says, "No, I'm a Marine." And then she says, "Pilots carry me to kill things." I thought that was a really wicked line.
That was a great line.
I really enjoyed that interaction, because although they're in pain and they're going through a lot, there's still that kind of wittiness to it.
Yeah, that was good.
Yep. I think for me, and I would normally side with you guys and say the space battles were it, but for me, I think this time it was the first scene with Anna. Coming into the
Eris was an inside job.
Well, yeah, but I loved it when she's confronting the guy there about the whole person who was being injured, and then her favorite line was, my favorite line was when she said, "Oh, they were just handing these out at the protest."
That was good.
I was like, okay, that was good. That was good. So, yeah, I really appreciated that.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we'd like to thank everybody for the reviews in iTunes. We're getting some awesome feedback from everybody. We love that, and we actually have a rating now in iTunes. So that puts us on the map already, a 4.5, which is pretty darn good.
Pretty darn good.
My arm's tired from patting myself on the back. Now,
that's okay. Oh, he's tired from patting himself on the back.
Now
people
are going to give us bad reviews, so you can stop patting yourself on the back.
No,
they don't want you to hurt yourself.
No.
It's you shouldn't be patting yourself on the back during a high G burn. That's not good for your arm. We already saw that happen with Epstein. Please don't do that.
You know, there was that scene where Bobby was under high G and she pulled something up to read something. I'm like,
it was her
isn't
arm.
Your arm awful heavy? Yeah, it was okay. Anyway, I like to pick up the small little minuscule things that make me question reality. Well, if we don't have anything else, then I think we're going to wrap this episode up unless you guys have anything else burning you want to discuss.
Get ready for so assured excited. Destruction.
So excited for the next episode.
Yep. You know, the only sad thing is every time we get done with an episode and we're looking forward to the next one, it's one episode closer to the end of the season.
Oh, it just makes me start.
Don't think about it like
you
that.
Negative,
I know, but
Nancy.
I can't help it. I can't help it.
I'm going to start calling you Negative Lou.
We're only two episodes in, man.
I know that, but I keep thinking it's only
Oh my god!
At least it's not as bad as Lost in Space, because right now I've only got one episode left to watch, and that, and you binge it, and I'm all done.
That's why binging isn't good for you.
Binging is bad for you. Yes, it really is.
Don't do it, kids.
Okay, so we'll wrap the episode up here. You can find us online. You can get emails to us by sending an email to typebeam@randomchatter.com. You can find us on Twitter. We are at the typebeam. The network is at Random Chatter. I am at Lou Secchi. That's Lusecki. Andrea, where can they find you?
Where
I
can we
have a
find
big
you?
Smile on my face.
I'm not sure if that's a.
Where
that's
can
a,
we find
H-A
you, Andrea?
Or H-A-A, H-A-A. I'm not sure how that's spelled.
How do you spell
can
it?
Find me at Cats Bears, and that's KATZBEARZ.
And Andrea's laughing because we always give her a hard time about the Z. So I know it's a Canadian thing. It's also an Australian thing too. So that's.
I just love that she has to spell it every time. That's what makes me laugh.
I
gave up
spelling.
And Shannon, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter and almost everywhere at Shank Beezy.
See, Andrea doesn't care if you spell it right or not, because she doesn't say it. That's it. It's name figured out. You can also find Eric online. He's not with us tonight, but you can find him online at Eric Blythe. That's ErikBlythe. You can find us on Instagram. We are just Random Chatter on Instagram. Also, you can find all of our stuff at randomchatter.com. Best way to find all of our shows. We have interesting articles up there. Always looking for new stuff out there. So we will hopefully be on Google Play at some point, but right now we're still trying to get that all worked out. We'd love it if you spread the word about the show. Leave us reviews on iTunes. You know, mark all the stars. Give us a review. Write more than just, hey, it was great. You know, say why it was good. What you like about us. If it's the interaction, if it's the in-depth analysis we do, or if it's just that, Andrea laughs a lot. So, you can do any of those things.
And I hope that gives us 5 stars.
Sure.
And feel free to let us know what we can improve on.
Exactly. Yeah. We'd love it. If you had things you want us to talk about that are negative about us, let us know directly. Yeah. You know, reviews are hard to change that way, but we'd love to know if there's something you don't like about us. We'll see what we can do to
make everybody happy. But we want to hear what you think. So
yeah,
please send more. Yeah,
I think Shannon is all over emails this week, so we'll see what happens with that. We get her to
shame. The shame bell is ringing behind me.
I hear it. What's that? Yeah, I hear it there. But also talk about us on social media as well. Twitter is great. Anywhere else you want to talk about us is fine. And of course, word of mouth. If your friends are into the same things you are, they might want to listen to the same shows you listen to as well. Of course, we do appreciate some financial support. We do that through Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/randomchatter. We have multiple levels of donations in there. Probably our most popular one and probably what I think is the best one is a $1 a month level where you get into our Discord channel where you can chat with all of us on everything from photography to collecting to the show to other shows we do, everything else out there. It's a great way to do that. If you want to get into doing the Patreon stuff, you can get into that by just getting into our free lobby and checking that out. There's a link to that on randomchatter.com. The music you hear in this podcast is Ursa Minor by Soul Dweller. All trademarks are owned by the respective owners. And until next week, we will see you guys later. Be safe.